Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio. What motivates you? Well, it seems to me that each athlete is motivated by some driving forces that uniquely play to their greatest fears. While the experiences that shaped those fears may be as varied as the individual themselves, common themes definitely can be observed across the board. Get John and Tex's take on motivating factors in this week's conversation. Here it is, episode 596.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. I'm sitting here with Mr. Chris McQuilkin, aka Tex. And I had a few questions for you. We just got done doing a podcast on Hammer, and I wanted to discuss with you motivation. We're getting ready to do this Hammer 90, and I wanted to just kind of do a little bit of a deep dive into motivation. I feel like there's probably so many disgusting podcasts on motivation where people are just like, you just got to grind. You got to, you know, sleep 0 hours. You know, you got to grind so hard that your side hustle becomes your main hustle. Then you got to start another side hustle just to keep your main hustle from eating your side hustle because you're motivated. I mean, the Gary V's, I mean, you listen to The Rock. I mean, everybody's got some take on motivation in this piece. How do you stay motivated?
Very good question, John. I'm very active in my community, especially with athletics. So it's easy to stay motivated because I have the fountain of youth in front of me. And I jump into the sprinting. And when I demonstrate any movement, here's the kicker. They don't necessarily listen to the words that are coming out of my mouth. They mimic to the best of their ability what I'm executing. So I have to go full speed. And I've entered the age range in which it's Achilles tendon tear.
Oh, you are in the danger zone.
Danger zone. So if I were to slack in my training, then there's the risk of not only falling on my face in front of my athletes or two, like some serious rehab that I want no part of.
Well, just to dissect this a little bit, we have a few themes here. One is people are never going to remember what you say. You're going to remember how you make them feel, which is another amazing motivational quote. And the other big one is the powerful motivator called shame.
Way to pull that out.
I've been saying this for years. Shame is by far your best friend and the greatest form of motivation. You going out and sprinting and doing change of direction and movement stuff with a bunch of kids.
In jeans.
Who will openly shame you. Not to your face, just on social media and other weird TikTok ways. But the personal feeling that you have for being able to want to impress them, and more importantly, have them be like, wow, this guy's pretty switched on. Like there's an element of shame and pride and ego, which I think, we've been saying like ego's real dangerous. You got to have pride in who you are. And I think the fact that you come in and train every day and you're consistent in it is because if you don't, you're going to fuck yourself up because you're out there trying to impress a bunch of 14-year-olds.
And this has happened. And the movement in which I pulled my groin, it was a horizontal row. So imagine a supine row.
Sure.
But to bring the team together, it's always a, and I'm going to use this touch point. So I want the kids
to in the weight room or where was this?
This was in the weight room. This is a number of years ago when I was at the high school in DC. But a touch point, like get the kids like hands on. So manual resistance stuff. This one was imagine I'm in a supine row, eyes to the sky. I'm holding on to
AKA supine.
Yeah. Okay. Holding on to rings, hanging from a squat rack, and then
pecker to the heavens.
Hand my heels to an athlete and then they hold. But then my job is to adduct, so squeeze my heels together.
Classic.
And crush.
Classic CrossFit football.
Exactly. Crush the teammate's hips.
Yeah.
So then I had a demonstration and I was using my words and like putting some energy to it.
Some
like
moxie, some gump.
Yeah. And I was demoing the row. Like, yeah, you got to hold here and then you got to crush their hips. And when I said crush, I like went for squeezing my heels on the athlete's hips.
Pulled your adductor.
Yeah. But
nice.
I didn't show face. Like, oh my God, it hurt like a motherfucker. But then I held my hands and continued the demonstration and then got everybody going. And then internally was like, oh my God, what an idiot. I just pulled my groin, like trying to
Kill that's, but that's real life teaching you, you mm-hmm. know? I mean, that's, dude, like, so for me, people always ask, like, you know, I mean, like the amount of like motivational stuff on social media is just almost like blinding. I go back to two things. One is I thought I created this, but Jordan Peterson obviously beat me to it in his 12 rules to live by. One of them is you can't compare yourself to anybody else. You can only compare yourself to the person who you were. So mm-hmm. who were you a year ago? And the reason being is everybody's working with a different framework. You know, if you start comparing yourself to somebody, we see it all the time in social media, right? Like something, like you post something and some guy will be like, how tall are you? And you're like, why? Are you trying to judge?
I never get that, actually.
Paul Carter told me whenever he posts something, he gets DM after DM of like, how tall are you?
And tall? Paul's relatively tall.
I think, what, 5'9"?
Oh, taller than I.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody's shorter than me, so I just assume everybody's short. But I think all too often we get stuck in this idea that we're, you know, in this constant rat race with other people. At the end of the day, the only person you're competing with is who you were. And that's why I think it's so interesting when you start thinking like we're doing here with the Hammer 90 Challenge. Like I'm not interested in like what you're doing, what anybody else is doing. I'm interested in who you were, you know, from point A, now all of a sudden 90 days later, who you've become. And if you can put a simple framework together to allow people to be the best versions of themselves, all too often in these training programs, people want to compare themselves on the leaderboard to this guy and this guy. And I always think it's a fool's errand. If anything, you need to compare yourself to who you were in the beginning and where you are periodically within this. And the reason being is you don't know what anybody else is working with. You don't know what their environment is. You don't know what they're doing. And so it becomes just, like I said, a fool's errand to start comparing yourself to other people. Now, in the NFL, it was different. We were, you know, actively compared to other people. This guy's better than this guy with ranking. But at the end of the day, in real life, it's not acceptable. The other one, too, there was a quote, and I had it on my wall for a number of years. So I should still probably put it back up. But it was Aristotle said, we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, therefore, is not an act, but a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people ask me, like, how do you have motivation? My motivation's already set because this is what we do, right? We get up every morning, right? Like, I mean, my routine is what saves me. You know, the other one where it's like, you hear people being like, you know, start giving you excuses. And my first thing is like, build the life that you want to live or that allows you to meet your goals. So, gym shut down. We didn't notice because we had a garage gym, mm-hmm. you know, pretty big building full of equipment. But at the end of the day, I never want somebody to tell me what I can and can't do in my own weight room. And I want to have the equipment that I want to have. And I want to have a good training environment. And that didn't look like it was happening at a commercial gym. I know this because I owned a gym for a number of years.
Right.
And I wanted my own space with my own equipment. I wanted to keep everything nice and I wanted it accessible. But all too often, I think people get out of a routine. And I think what you have to do is you have to, I mean, and what's wild too is the older I get, the more I realize that routine is what saves us. If this is just what you do, then that becomes a part of your life. I asked my brother about it because he went through an injury. He actually ruptured his quadriceps tendon,
mm-hmm.
and you know he goes to the gym every day and he still trains. All he did was he just pivoted his rehab into his training, and so now he goes to a place where he goes and does his rehab and they do his training. It's like it's the same thing. It's what I've always done. We've always trained. It's always been a part of it. I just go to a different place now until I get better and I'll go back to the other place. And he has to be a little bit smarter. He ended up building a garage gym.
Badass.
So we went through and did a bunch of stuff and like it was cool to go in. And when I was there, he ordered a new trap bar. So when he asked me, he's like, what do you think about pulling deadlifts? I'm like, I like a trap bar, especially for you, because it allows for his knee for us to set different heights, you know, because of the body position from the trap bar being uh-huh. within the center of gravity. So the position is more like a squat. The loading. And when I did my patellar tendon rehab, I actually used a trap bar. I don't think I back squatted, almost for 9 months The majority of stuff I did was all kind of single leg, unilateral Bulgarian split squat, single leg press, and trap bar was really my heavy X hinge. And the reason being was I could control the depth. So if the knee was feeling tight, I would set the weights at different heights. And, you know, and it got to the point where I ended up putting just a whole bunch of 25s on there and trying to get as much as low as I can.
On that note, with the injury you just introduced for yourself back then, you had an external. So we're going to get into internal and external motivators. You had an external motivator that turned internal. A doctor said to you in front of your parents, no one's ever come back from this before.
Yeah.
But you were able to internalize that. So, like, I mean, speak to that. Like, how often was that thought of that doctor's words in your mind? You still tell that story today, and here we are, I mean, 20 years later, mm-hmm. 23, yeah. 22 years later.
And it feels like just yesterday.
So it's still it's so there for you. So, man, speak to that during the 9-month training rehab process, those words, because it's still there, man.
Yeah, no. I remember when the doctor came in, and I'm looking down at my kneecap, and it was 3 inches too right, or too far to the left. Or no, I'm sorry, it was my left knee, so it was too far to the right, and it was sitting up high on my knee. And I knew my kneecap was in the wrong place. And the doctor comes in, and like I'd never heard anybody rupturing a patellar tendon. He's like, "Hey, you ruptured your patellar tendon." And for those of you guys that don't know, tendons connect muscles to bone, and ligaments collect, you know,
bone
to bone. So, you know, my kneecap, really, I mean, like without a patellar tendon, you're bending your knee. So when the doctor came in and said, "Hey, we've never had anybody come back from a mid patellar rupture," that was a dark moment because, I mean, you know, obviously at the time I trusted doctors. I'm a little less trusting now because I've seen them, you know, make comments like this and come back in against it. And I remember, you know, the surgery was pretty invasive. And they gave me a bunch of like Oxycontins. So I took those the first day. The problem is I'm super sensitive to painkillers. So like I just felt so sick and lethargic. I couldn't go number two, which was a huge problem. So I took them and I was like, the pain's going to be terrible. I just put them in the toilet. I just threw them down the toilet. I killed the fishes. But I remember it took it like, and then all of a sudden the pain set in and I was like, man, I can, you know, kind of gut through this with the idea that I don't like the feeling of being backed up. Like that's a terrible feeling. Like I know some people don't mind being constipated and that's not a good feeling for me. And I knew that the painkillers caused constipation. So I got rid of them. It took me about 2 days for everything to normalize and I could deal with the pain if I could go, you know, and everything was working fine. All of a sudden after about, you know, a week or two of the pain started subsiding and I laid in bed for 3 weeks. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, the rehab process starts and you're kind of in this kind of down, kind of down to the dumps, woe is me. And that lasted for most of the season because I was, you know, I was alone in a dark place. And the guys that I was buddies with who were playing football had no time for me. You know, they wanted me to come in after everybody had already gone to meetings. So I was kind of sequestered from the team and it was just a dark time. You know, rookie in the NFL, I'm from California, I'm living in Philly, I don't know anybody. I'm living downtown, it's dark, it's cold, and everybody looks like they're kicking ass, and I'm hurt. And it was extremely depressing. And I read a lot. You know, I mean, this is pretty much pre-internet, so there was no social media or nothing. I mean, so I just read a ton. And I started devising this game plan in my head. Like, football's over. Right? I mean, I pretty much wrote off football. But I was knowing, like, hey, I got at least another year in this. I need to at least try to come back. Prove to myself I can do it, but the game plan was to go to law school. So I wanted to rehab, and my entire goal was that I didn't want to walk with a limp. So what happens when you're on crutches, people are always like, oh, what went wrong? What happened? And I tell them. And then everybody launches into this story about either themselves or somebody they know that had a knee injury that never was right again. Mm-hmm. Everybody's like, my buddy tore his ACL, was never right again. Oh, I did this. It was never right again. Everybody always wants to tell you these negative stories because it's like, it's almost like the crab in the bucket. And it was fucking incredible to me that I'm like, not a single person came over to me and was like, dude, you'll be fine. I had a buddy hurt their knee. They came back and they were 110%. Nobody ever told me that story. So you start kind of believing them and it just kind of got dark. And then all of a sudden it got cold. And I remember, I would like crutch down to this bar down on Walnut Street. It was like an Irish bar, and sit there and just read a magazine or a newspaper and drink a beer and just kind of watch the games and hang out. And I just remember like thinking like, what's my game plan? And I remember on a bar napkin, I wish I still had it, but I wrote down and I was like, you know, number one, get healthy. Number two, walk without a limp. Number three, you know, let the chips fall where they may. Number four, get ready to go to law school. So my thought was that I would rehab, go to training camp, give it the one try, get cut, and then at that point, just go back and start my life. And all of a sudden, like as the training like went, like they, like I remember the season ended and I went home, went back to California for a little bit. And I kind of told my parents what I'd planned and they were like, you know, whatever you want to do. And then they required that I show up for rehab like the day after the Super Bowl. So the Super Bowl was on a Sunday. Monday, I had to be in Philly for rehab. And so none of the players really come back till March. So I was there by myself from like, I mean, this is when the Super Bowl was like mid-January. So I was there like mid-January, end of January, all the way through. And nobody came back till like March, you know, like after the draft, like that first deal was in March. And that's when really everything starts. Well, actually, I'm sorry, the draft's later on.
Combine.
Yeah, I'm sorry, the combine. So, I mean, there was 2 months where I was all by myself. And I'd started training. And I remember my training wasn't going real well. I couldn't get any strength in the knee. I was kind of freaking out a little bit. We ended up, you know, flying out to Colorado to go see, get a second opinion. And the doctor, who was Dr. Stedman, made an interesting comment. He's like, you know, it's nerves. We don't know when they're going to rewire, but when they do, you'll know. And then I ended up getting hooked up with Charlie Francis. And like, it was just kind of a weird thing. And then all of a sudden I started using the EMS devices. I kind of changed up the training. And then all of a sudden some rewired. And I remember I had been doing like single leg press and it was like 90 pounds on there. It was all I could get. And then all of a sudden one day I came in and I was like, it was kind of light. And I was like, put more weight on 135, put more weight on 185. And I went up to like 210 and all of a sudden started kind of training. And it was weird. Like it kind of was this like butting my head up against the wall, but I didn't know what else to do. I mean, I was living there. I had no family and no friends, no girlfriend. I mean, my girlfriend was back in home and I just had nothing else to do. And they were paying me to rehab and it was part of required. So I just had to show up every day. Mm-hmm. And every day I came in and like, I could see the look on the trainer's faces. Like this dude's not fucking turning the corner. He's not turning the corner. And I had nothing else to do. So I would go in, I would lift weights. I would go eat, go back and lift weights. And then I would go home, eat. And then I'd go to the gym down the street and lift some weights. And all of a sudden one day, everything kind of started wiring up and I started pushing. And I remember I left and I was pretty excited. And I remember I called my brother, Eddie, and who's always been like the rock in my life. And I was like, dude, I made progress today. Because, I mean, every time I call him, he's like, how's it going? I'm like, fuck, man, it's like stale, stale, stale. And I remember I went home and I was pretty excited. And I went to bed and I woke up. And dude, I remember this is still funny. Like, do you remember when was it in Rocky III when he's like, I can't remember what Rocky was when he's like, get up, you son of a bitch, Mickey loves you, like that whole thing.
Yeah, three.
Yeah, in Rocky III. Like I had that same kind of moment where I was laying there in bed and like something kind of kicked me in the pants and was like, get up, you son of a bitch, you got work to do. And I kind of had that mentality, and I went in and it was like, It was so defeating to go in and train every day and not make any progress. Like I wasn't making any, it was fucking stale. And I just had this idea that like eventually something's got to give. Either I'm going to break or it's going to break. And all of a sudden my body at some point rewired. And next thing I know, all of a sudden it wasn't like I was making like incremental gains. I was making fucking like quantum leap gains. And all of a sudden I was like fucking, everything was just kind of wiring up and I just hit my stride and the training was good. And it was like, it was Spartan. It was dingy. We were training in a broom closet in Philadelphia. Fucking Mike Wolf and Tommy Canavy were there and they were fucking literally had their full attention. And they were like, either you're going to fucking quit or we're going to break you. And it was fucking epic. And I came back and started, you know, 16 games that next year. So I think that quote from Aristotle, like just saved me in that it was like, excellence is just, it's not an act. It's a habit. If you consistently get up and you work hard each day, good things happen. And I think all too often there's this idea that, you know, somebody's going to tap you on the shoulder and magic's going to happen and you're going to be this Gary V guy where it's like, you know, find a bush, you're going to be CEO of the bush, and next thing that bush is going to be a, you know, $1 trillion bush, and you're going to be fine. It doesn't fucking exist. Like, what I think Gary V all too often forgets, and he does, I mean, you hear him talk about, you know, all these different hacks, whatever, but the one thing that he always promotes and everybody promotes that's ever been successful is consistency. Mm-hmm. If you get up every day and, you know, like the one I've always been fascinated with, and maybe this goes back to the source book that we read where, you know, what you envision becomes your reality.
Dr. Tara Swart.
What we do becomes becomes a reality. And I think that there's some real benefit to that. If you can visualize it, is it so much that, like, if this is who I want to be, I can become that individual? And I think the biggest thing is you got to get up and see it every day. You have to be consistent. Like, nothing, like, nobody's consistent just doing it once. And, you know, whether it be, you know, whenever we see incredible athletes, what we don't see, like, we see the moment where they shine. We don't see the 20 years of work leading up to it. You know, you get to see a guy, like, one of my favorites is the Jeff Bezos on a yacht. And then they show the picture of him, like, in like a one car garage with like a handmade Amazon sign sitting by himself with, like, you know, he's bald, obviously. He shaved his head and he looks way fucking cooler now, but just like sitting there in like a brown crappy suit, driving in his fucking Honda Accord. And he had a vision and he was consistent. Mm-hmm. His parents believed in him. They invested money and he grew it into the biggest company on the planet. Like, to me, like, he hit a lot of pieces, but dude, I mean, think about how many days that guy was like, fuck, is today the day I give up?
Yeah. So, well, on that, and then just to bring in like those external factors, I mean, that's where I feel people are constantly seeking, and that's why they go to the YouTube and type in motivation. That's why, like, these compilations of Les Mills and David Goggins and The Rock, all these dudes are piece together, it's because they're looking for that external piece.
Yeah, but like
I understand.
I enjoy those as much as anybody. I mean, like, I told this yesterday. So we're getting some concrete poured up at our building, and we're trying to, like, finally finish out the apron. And the guy that came to pour it, you know, poured our slab, and he's done a bunch of work for me, and I consider us friends. And I was like, yeah, man, what's going on? He's like, oh, man, we've been busting ass. We built a big RV park and air-conditioned storage out in Blanco, kind of that area out there. And it's going to be like, it's on acres. And he was taking me through. And he's like, fuck, it's been a lot of work. And he's like, but it's finally, like, you know, it's paying the note. And he kind of explained everything. And I was like, fuck, man, that's awesome. Congratulations. I love hearing about people's successes. I love hearing people win, especially when you go all in and you take this gamble and you don't know if it's going to pay off. And when it finally does, he's like, man, there was, you know, like, I've gained some weight because I've been eating myself nervous. And I was like, yo, man, like, you've had the ability to, like, be able to not only execute this stuff, but the ability to win. And I love hearing people's victories. I think all too often in life, everybody's waiting for everybody else to fail because it allows them to feel better about their failures. And but that's the interesting piece. And that's why I've always said, and, like, it's so cool that Jordan Peterson wrote that, is that the only person I can compare myself to is the older version of myself or the younger version of myself, who I was a year ago, who I was 5 years ago. And I think all too often when we start comparing ourselves to other people, it's a fool's errand. It just doesn't work. And so I think for you as an individual, what I'm searching for is growth. And the secret to growth is consistency and basically putting something in play that becomes the habit. And I know it's so easy to say it, but, like, doing the little things, like, what is it? Do the common things uncommonly well. Mm-hmm. You know, if, like, the training is important, if work's important, if marriage is important or whatever it is, fostering, developing relationships, whatever you want to do, I think you have to put that at the top of, you know, on your bar napkin. When you write number one, you have to decide, you know, the age old Billy Crystal, find that one thing. Well, what is it? I don't know. It's different for everybody, but find that bar napkin, put it at the top, and then consistently go and execute that and don't give up. And, I mean, have that relentless pursuit.
Yes. And with in line with the bar napkin and a trap that people, if they're seeking external motivations, the trap that they commonly fall into, what are the first goals that they write? It's outcome goals. Mm-hmm. So it's, I want to lose 30 pounds. And once you do hit that, accomplish that goal, say you lost 30 pounds, then you have a moment of then what? And lost, and you have to continuing to seek this external, which could potentially fall into the trap of while comparing yourselves to other people rather than the internal and the process. So you aimed and through your explanation of that, it was the process of, okay, I have this outcome that's never been accomplished before. How am I going to climb that mountain? Well, one day at a time. First it's 90 pounds, then it's 95 and so on. But until it was 95, it was 90 and showing up every single day. So it was part of the process. And then fortunately you had dudes like Navy that were on your side and you created, maybe it was empowered, maybe it was created, maybe it was through a life of, you know, with your brothers and your father and mother, awesome mom, an identity was built and those coaches were able to feed into that identity and help really internalize it. So then it was, you became the process, you became John Wellborn, not John Wellborn, the football player, you became John Wellborn. And so you put your stamp on all of your actions, whether it was rehab, whether it was showing up and every single play in OTAs, that's a whole other awesome story that we can get into or not, but it was assigning your name to everything that then became just who you are, all the actions. And now you still live that to this day as a retired now CEO and founder of Power Athlete and father. You still show up and bang weights every day. You don't have to, but you do.
Well, yeah. Do you know why? Do you know how weird it feels if I don't train? And like, and what's wild is even if I miss in the morning, I'll go up there and I still try to do something in the afternoon because it's really been the foundation. Like, and I know this is so strange, but when I was a skinny, you know, 13, 14 year old, even younger than that, I've told you the story about why I wanted to lift weights, didn't I? Without Lyle Alzado. Did I tell you that one?
When
we
yes.
were at the beach and we were junior lifeguards and we saw like literally it looked like a riot. And we like went over because we thought that there was like a fight or something. And we see this dude walking down the boardwalk and like this dude walks by and he's like wearing a gold chain. He's got like a string tank top and kind of short, like bike shorts on. The dude was massively, massively fucking jacked, tan, fucking huge chest. And I remember thinking like, holy shit, like I want to lift weights. Mm-hmm. And that guy was Lyle Alzado. Dude, who, if you guys want to Google him, I mean, played for the Raiders, was just lived in our town, and he was just strolling on the beach, walking on the boardwalk on a Tuesday at like 10 in the morning, and physically enough to inspire a kid to want to lift weights. And then I ended up meeting him years later. He was a total fucking asshole, but good football player. I mean, like just one of like the the quintessential Oakland Raider guys, but man, just an impressive dude.
Yeah.
And but that's something that's always if you go look at Henry Rollins, any of his stuff, and every CrossFit gym we worked into had the 200 pounds is 200 pounds, but there's something unforgiving about the weights and the training because it has no memory, right? Like it's not like I benched 400 pounds and I walk in there and I put 400 pounds and the 400 pounds looks over and goes, oh, John's done me before. You know, we should be easy on him. No, fucking. If you think about the Henry Rollins quote, 200 pounds is 200 pounds because it will always be heavy. Mm-hmm. And if you don't pay it its respect, it'll fucking bite you in the ass if you're not consistent in going out there and fighting it. And I think the struggle of training and lifting weights and, hammering your body into something that you're proud of, has been a constant work of art. And there's always an idea. And I think it's funny because, all too often people are like, oh, I'm past my prime. I look at a dude like The Rock and I'm like, shit, my best years are in front of me. If The Rock can be that good in shape at 50, I can be in better shape than I was. So I think that piece is important. But, the motivation to, like Seneca made an interesting quote. As you guys know, I'm even though it's become very fashionable to quote Stoics these days, I mean, this was what I... this was my major in college, right? But he did make an interesting point about like how each day is its own life. So like when you wake up each day, imagine that you're not living an entire life, but imagine each day from sunrise to sunset is one lifetime. And you have the opportunity to live thousands of lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're judged on each day as a life, how would you live each life? How do you want to be remembered? And, the idea of, greatness echoes through eternity. So the bigger rock that you splash, You know, I mean, look at all these incredible thinkers. Look at these people that have been so pivotal in this world that will be remembered for thousands of years. And what's even more interesting now with the advent of technology and podcasts and, you know, digital and all this, think about how many incredible thinkers, right? Like, I mean, will never be remembered.
That's unfortunate. However, you as an individual, you still have your network and your opportunity. So this is why we gave a presentation at the old seminar of Coach's Responsibility.
Yeah.
And we still speak to some negative experiences that we had with sport coaches, but also positive experiences, as you mentioned, Canavy before. And that's the importance that every single rep, every single practice, every single training session, every single day that you have responsibility with someone else where their performance is in your hands matters.
Yeah.
So the unfortunate reality, whether it's fitness or strength and conditioning, like it's break a lot of eggs to make an omelet. It wasn't my program. It was the athlete's fault. It's your fault.
Sure.
Why this didn't work. So that really boils my blood. The people that don't take this personal responsibility to be the coach they want coaching them. And I mean, provide, we do our due diligence to provide the best direction and aim and advice and guidance and training programs as we can. But then there's other flashes in the pan.
Well, so what's
we're competing against.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, I don't compete against anybody other than ourselves. The information that we put out, I know it's good. And we have, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, people are going to be distracted by bright, shiny lights or this. And at the end of the day, consistency is what gets done. And I realized that listening to a podcast where some guy gets in there, he talks about, you know, consistency and effort and being stalwart and just keep fucking putting your shoulder against the door while the wind is blowing and not giving up is the secret to success. I wish I had some fucking life hack. My life hack is consistency. Just wake up every day and do the common things uncommonly well. I had to find a quote because it was so good from Marcus Aurelius' Meditations. It's suppose that a god announced that you were going to die tomorrow or the day after. Unless you were a complete coward, you wouldn't kick up a fuss about which day it was. What difference could it make? Now recognize that the difference between years from now and tomorrow is just as small. So, I mean, the idea that, if every day is, you know, and I fucking also hate these motivational, like live every day like it's your last. Like nobody fucking lives like that. And, you know, if you did, you wouldn't live in a house. You'd probably sell everything and fucking travel. Because if you told me that if the world was ending in a week, you know, would I pack everything up and fly to, you know, want to be standing in the Roman Colosseum when the whole thing went up? I don't know. No, I'd be exactly where I am right here with my family. Probably cooking an amazing steak and drinking a bunch of those wines we've been saving. You know, that's another thing. You know, look at all the cool wines we've collected. How come we don't drink them more often? Shouldn't we drink every amazing wine because we don't know if we're going to get them to drink them tomorrow? You know?
Well, when I come over, Kate pulls out the bottles I gifted and just, yeah, we got to get rid of these.
No, we actually use the ones you gifted when we cook. So when I did those fillets that were soaked in cloth. So did I tell you about that? I sent you the video.
It must have been an amazing meal. I missed it. My invitation got lost in the mail.
All right. So we did it on New Year's. I got these big tenderloin like pieces, and I cut them up. And there was a deal where the guy had soaked a dishcloth in wine. And then he pretty much opened it up, just coated it in salt, and then tied it up, and then put it right on the coals to cook it 9 minutes aside. It came out. Like it was unreal. Like we had people there who I didn't know, like friends of like the girl, you know, ride people, bar yeah, people. Yeah, yeah. And the one dude was like, I've traveled a lot and that might be the best steak I've ever had. And I'm like, I don't know if you're lying to me, but I'll take it. But the idea that, you know, like you never know when your last day and this today's kind of impactful. Like my dad passed away. It was 4 years ago, February 28th. And, you know, I think about the fact that, you know, people live with this idea that they're going to live forever. And then one day you don't and it ends and you never want to be on your deathbed and feel like if only I had another day. And I know this is so cheesy and the motivation stuff because, you know, like at the end of the day, nobody lives a life like it's going to end. You know, we don't. I mean, it's just human nature. If we did, we would probably wake up every morning and say the things we always wanted to say, live the life, you know, like it just, and then we would realize too, that a lot of the stuff that we chase is meaningless bullshit. Like on my dad's final day, it's not as if he's like, man, I wish I had a bigger Rolex. Like he didn't talk about his suits or the fact that this, I mean, all he wanted to do was talk about all the fun times we had as a family. And the, you know, all the years we went skiing in Mammoth and did this and all the things that he saw that he wanted us to do with him. And so I think all too often, the things that we think matter at this, at the most important moments aren't the ones that matter. And I think the relationships and the times you have and the meals and the fun and the laughing and the trips, like those are the things we remember. Like we're getting ready to go out and do a bitchin' road trip where we're going to the Olympia. No, the Arnold. Right. I always get them confused. But we're going to Columbus. We're going to get a chance to chop it up with Louis Simmons. We're going to see Jim Wendler. We're going to do some podcasts. We're going to get to go see a really, you know, interesting part of the world in a really interesting time, because I always find like the bodybuilding culture so fascinating. So I'm excited to go. And
well, and we also will be presenting on athleticism.
That's true. We are.
Arnold presenting. Education.
Yep. Which I think is fun because we get a whole bunch of access to a bunch of people that have probably never heard of Power Athlete and maybe never heard of Power Athlete Radio. But at the end of the day, like what motivates me to continue to do what I'm doing? I think it's because there's so many people out there that are doing a shitty job. And I don't say that because we're casting stones, but I think there's just a lot of bullshit out there. It's a reason that, you know, I mean, one of the fundamental aspects of this podcast and Power Athlete's always been about battle the bullshit. And I'm sure there's somebody out there who can fucking cast a stone at us. But at the end of the day, being able to provide good information to people and make it easily accessible and digestible and lead them on this journey so that they can become better versions of themselves, I think is at the end. I mean, I don't think we can ask ourselves to do any more.
No. And still aiming to figure it out. And that's why I continue to coach. I mentioned the community earlier, and I was explaining movement and coaching. Basically, the breakdown of coaching that we assign in the trainer's course that we got: define movement, model movement, shape movement, and reinforce. And defining, imagine like in the world of sport, if I'm defining it like this is our scheme or this is our formation. And then we provide the model and I can draw it up, X's and O's, like the old school whiteboard, football or chalkboard, right on. And then we provide our movement, our athletes the opportunity to move. Shape a go run the play based off what we talk about, and then we got to run it again, and I provide some coaching direction. We're trying to shape it in so it's picture perfect, as if it was, you know, taken from another professional athlete's film, or, you know, perfectly drawn lines on the chalkboard. And if it's good, reinforce it, awesome, we can move on. If it's not, like, we're staying with it and shaping. And then I was explaining this, but then had the epiphany, like later on following the conversation last night, that this also carries over to leadership, to being a good teammate. So we as coaches and leaders or seniors and captains need to define exactly what a good teammate is. What are my expectations of the freshman? I can't assume. And that's the other thing. Like these older kids assume that these kids, freshmen, will just fall in line. This is the culture. No, they need mentorship. Like from a coach as much as they do a senior captain.
So, in your mind, like when does intrinsic motivation come over? Because I like, this is an interesting piece for like the kids that you're working with.
Yeah.
Like you said, like mentors, you have this extrinsic, like, you know, external forces, you know, mentoring these kids. At which point do you see that switch from when like the coach and the players believe in me to like, I believe in me?
Right on. So with the youth, the boys anyway, like it's when playing grab ass. And so I'm going to play this sport because my friends play this sport. Mm-hmm. And like practice is play time, starts to switch gears and realize that I'm progressing. I'm actually pretty good. So when you transition from grab ass to good, that's when the intrinsic motivation. And I mean, skill work, I'm going to reference lacrosse, but it works for anything. Like the more I pass and throw, or if I'm a wide receiver, run routes. Lacrosse is simple catch and throw. So I got to catch and throw and read the defense and be where I got to be and tell my teammates. So it's a complicated sport, as all are. But then I have the ability to, and we go through our Power Athlete, like what we represent competency in, I stop thinking about where my hands are on my stick, and I start thinking about where my teammate is up the field. So I start to get good at my sport. And not all, it doesn't happen to everyone. Like, there's goofy kids that are juniors and seniors and will go on and say, hey, you know, 10 years ago, I played high school lacrosse. Then there's kids that, yeah, 10 years ago, I was the captain of my team. We went this far in the playoffs, and then it provided me the opportunity to go play college or get into a school that, you know, would have me. So it is a switch. It is a moment. And like, as much as we want it as coaches to accelerate, it's got to happen on their own. But the best we can do is provide them the opportunity. So I love warmups. As we all know, if we're listening to Power Athlete Radio for a long time, it's having the kids lead the count. Yeah. So saying, all right, freshman, you're 5 squats, 5 4 count push-ups on you, ready, ready. And then they have to awkwardly scream 1, 2, 3, 1 and have their moment to lead. It's going to suck. They feel tension that all eyes are on them, but it's good for them long term. And then the same with a demo. If we're demoing, you know, starfish or lateral step catch, anything, just pick a random kid, put them in the middle, and have them demo for the whole team. So then they feel the pressure of all eyes are on me, and I have to execute. I have to listen to coach. And then they are the model of the movement, and then I shape them. They don't do it perfectly. I shape them in front of everyone to show, like, hey, not everyone's perfect, and then reinforce, like, hey, thank you for standing up. Let's get back to our drill. Sure. Or everybody go. Like,
sure.
So it's aiming to utilize this to put all eyes on them to realize it's not that bad.
Or all have eyes them speak. On me.
Or have them speak and realize, like, this is not that bad. So it's aiming to accomplish that. I mean, we'll see if it carries over long term. If I don't know, but doing my damnedest for that reverberation.
Well, I think so this is the interesting thing about being a coach or a father, for those of you guys that are both and whatnot, you have the ability to see the past and the future, right? Like, I mean, like, I think as a father, I can see where I came from and the path to success. And for your kids, there's this idea that you want to lay it out for them and kind of help them along it. But then you have to realize I have to let them walk their own path. I mean, I can just provide the opportunity. You know, like, I mean, at the end of the day, I can't get in there and do it for you. So all you have to do is provide the opportunity. And I think all too often as a coach or as a parent, you can see this, like you can see the future. If only you did this, this could happen. And I'm sure for you as a lacrosse coach, you know, having played it, you know, in a collegiate level and you've seen these kids progress, you have the ability to be like, hey man, you've got some really good skills. If you could just work harder, you might be able to translate this into something else. Because here's the deal, and my brother put it great the other day when we were at home. We went to my nephew's baseball game, and so my brother was talking to him. I mean, he's a sophomore, pretty good player, and he was like asking my brother and me, he's like, you know, like how long should I play? And my brother said, as long as you can, because one day you're going to be a spectator, and it sucks to be a spectator. Play the game. He's like, you know, look, he goes, I got to play through college. Your Uncle John got to play, you know, for a decade in the NFL. And even when it ended for him, he wasn't ready for it to end. Can you imagine if your career in terms of sporting and playing like this ends in high school? He's like, you don't want it to. Play as long as you can, because once it ends, that's the finality of it. So continue to play. And Luke's super smart. Like, he has great grades. He's like a sophomore and, like, you know, taking like 5 AP classes and doing all this wild stuff that I probably never did. But he's got a great opportunity. And my thing was like the only thing that is universal for, and I told him this, I'm like, dude, you're your father's son, right? That's a hell of a statement, because my brother Eddie is one of the hardest workers and one of the most successful people I know. And I was like, you come from that, like, naturally. All you have to do is work hard and apply yourself, and good things will happen. I mean, just because it's like, that's the natural recipe for it. Like, just do the hard work, continue to train, do everything, wake up early, just apply yourself. Mm-hmm. And he will. And he's super conscientious. But it was just funny when my brother said, he's like, as long as you can, because one day when it ends and you got to be a spectator, it sucks. So I think as a coach, you're sitting there working with these kids and you're like, you know, you have the ability to go on and maybe play. And maybe if it's at a Division II or Division III school, as long as you're continuing to play and the ball's the ball's flying, you're having a good time, because one day it's going to end and you're going to look back, and that's how you're going to take count of this thing. So, I mean, even with my, with my kids, they're young, like, do everything, play every sport, enjoy it, find what you want, because there's only a certain point in your life where you get to do this stuff. At some point, the real world starts and you don't get to do this stuff and play a game for a living. So I think the motivation piece of, it's hard to, and some kids grasp that at a young age, that greatness is within within striking, or they can reach for the ring and be great. And we see people do that all the time. But I think, that kind of blind dedication to continue to kind of move forward, and without knowing how good you're going to be. I mean, when I started lifting weights, I knew my brothers were pretty big. I didn't know how it would go. I got a scholarship to go to college. I showed up. I didn't know how far I would go. I got injured. I didn't know if this would be the end of it. I mean, my brother Rob tore his ACL and never wanted to play football again. I tore my ACL and was like, fuck, like, this won't define me. I tore my patellar tendon. This won't define me. And I think that's a piece of just blind dedication, and more importantly, just stupidity. Just like my dogs outside playing, like, one of them, like, they're not going to give up until one of them passes out. And I think if you have that game in you and you have that, like, that drive to be great, I think you just have to apply it. And it's a hard thing. Like this is an interesting piece for kids, like, because they don't have the historical data of information of wins and losses and, love and lost in this, and people, like, passing away, like, sitting there and reminiscing with the kids about about my dad and their grandfather, they're like, oh, we miss him. But they miss him because they had such a short time with him. And I was trying to explain it, like, all this, I miss him because he was, he was my dad. He's a function of my life. We have him up on the wall over here. Then the other piece too, I think about all too often is, you are representing somebody. The person that you are and the person that you become honors your father and your family. The people that I become, or that I was, just like my kids when they grow up, and who they are and that name on the back of their jersey represents who I am.
And if you don't have that, hold the mirror up and represent yourself. So there's still a lot of people pushing blame and pointing fingers out there. Oh, this program didn't do it for me. Or did you not do it for the program?
Well, my coach didn't like me. That's my other favorite one. And I played with coaches that legitimately didn't like me. And I still played because I was the best fucking player. And that's a hard one too, especially for kids. Oh, I don't feel like my coach likes me. And it's easy as a parent to be like, I don't care if your coach likes you or not. Go out there and bust your ass. What coaches like is winners and people that are good. And if a coach doesn't like somebody who's good, I mean, have you run into that?
No, I mean, effort. Like, yeah. If you think at a moment in time you're the best person on the field and you stop going and giving everything at that moment, yeah, I'm not going to like you at this moment. So I'll aim to provide some guidance to pull the best out of you. Well, but if you start talking back at me, then we're going to have some problems.
Yeah. Well, you want the kids to be the best version of themselves.
Correct.
And I think sport's a great way for it. I think hardship and training and weights and, like I've told people a million times on this podcast, everything good I learned in this world, I learned from my parents. I learned from the weight room, learned from playing football, learned from those interactions and adversity and, overcoming injuries and battling and fighting and, losing and winning. I mean, all this stuff, man, it's been a great teacher. And at the end of the day, if you can just put the habits together to be successful, and if you look at people, I mean, just do a case study of the people that are most successful. The most successful people in the world are the people that consistently do what they're supposed to. Blindless dedication to doing the small things right every day. Like, don't miss your training. Eat your food. Just be, consistent in who you are. If you can add consistency, I think greatness is within striking distance. Cool.
Boom.
Well, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. If you want more information on training programs, nutrition, or really anything, you can go to powerathletehq.com. And if you want to dial in on the training, just shoot us an email, info@powerathletehq.com. We'll respond. We'll help you get in the right place. And if you're looking to book a consult or do anything, we are easy to get a hold of.
If a coach needs a coach. academy.powerathletehq.com.
And we'll take you on your journey. Happy to do it. So be well.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. Join us next week for our conversation with 5'3" legend Jim Wendler. Until next time, bye!